Welcome to the Esports Business Network podcast. I'm your host, Trent Knox. I'm the founder and CEO of Esports Business Network. This is EBN podcast number 34. Our guest is Taylor Gotch of eSpin.gg. Taylor is the director of partnerships at Stay Plugged In, also known as eSpin.gg. Taylor has worked in the entertainment and sports industry throughout her career. While working in college, she was a character actress for Disney. And that experience helped her find her way into a role in traditional sports marketing with the Los Angeles Angels professional baseball team. Now offered the opportunity to take on a leadership role in esports, she now is expanding the market of esports. In this podcast, we talk about how there are different markets in esports, how esports is integrating into grade school, and what is the future of Carolina Esports Hub. Enjoy.
This is the future. Evolution. This is the future.
Hey, y'all, it's Trent Knox back with another Esports Business Network podcast. Today's guest is Taylor Gotch of eSpin.gg. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Really excited to talk to you guys.
Yeah, I wanted to get you in. Unfortunately, the panel that happened was yesterday. Maybe we could talk a little bit about that during the podcast. But I usually ask my guests, how did you get into the business of gaming and esports?
Yeah, so I have, you know, the last 10, 12 years spent time in sports and entertainment. Through college and a little bit after, I worked for Disney, and Disney obviously used to own the Los Angeles Angels. So I spent another 6 years working for the MLB, working in baseball. And I was in corporate partnerships there. So, you know, I started noticing that a lot of our partners were investing in esports, and whether that be, you know, with organizations around LA or, you know, some of the Blizzard is there, Blizzard, Riot, like some of the, you know, bigger publishers also as well were there. So I started, you know, getting my feet wet and kind of getting involved and going to a couple events. And then I kind of made the transition. I got a job offer here in Charlotte and moved from California. And I've spent the last, you know, 5 months here with the Charlotte Phoenix and also our sister company, Stay Plugged In. And they have, you know, two different focuses. One is a pro org and the other one is a recruiting platform for high school students to get college scholarships to some of the varsity programs.
Very cool. Have you been a gamer your whole life?
I haven't. I played, you know, for fun. Obviously, I have a couple brothers, so I played for fun. But, you know, now it's something that I definitely realize I enjoy as an adult. So I've got, you know, an Xbox in my my office now, and I've been picking up some of the shooter games. I like Call of Duty. I just started on my mobile, the Brawl Stars. I really enjoy that. I can kind of take it anywhere. But yeah, just for fun and casually growing up, but now I'm, you know, trying to hold my own with the guys in the office.
Very cool. And did you play sports growing up?
Yeah, so I was a gymnast growing up and into college. So I was a collegiate gymnast, and that sucked up a lot of my time. I might have been more into gaming if, you know, I wasn't in the gym so many hours a day.
Sure. What was that like? What was your, I don't know anything about gym, being a gymnast. So what was your your discipline? Yeah.
Yeah. So I was mainly vault and floor. Those were my two main events. And, you know, it's, it takes a lot of work and it's a lot of time to give up as a kid, just like any, you know, sport. Kids, if, you know, you want to be good at something, you know, you have to practice a lot. And obviously I see that in gaming and I see that in the kids in our leagues as well. And, you know, traditional sports and, you know, esports are no different. It's definitely something that you have to dedicate a lot of time to if you want to, you know, kind of grow your skill set.
Yeah, absolutely. And so did you go to college based off of like a sports scholarship, or did you pursue it in college?
Yeah, I did. So I got a partial scholarship for the school that I went to, a, you know, small liberal arts school in California, and mm-hmm. they had a decent gymnastics team. I didn't want to compete at the level where it would, you know, take up my entire college experience. So I was able to, you know, do it in a way and on a team that I still had a, you know, athlete life balance, school life balance.
Yeah, absolutely. So in college, when you were attending, I'm sure they didn't have any esports programs or gaming programs at that time.
Yeah, they didn't. And, you know, it was something that I started hearing. I obviously went to school and was living in Newport Beach, California, which is about 10 minutes from UCI. So I had a ton of friends who, you know, went to UC Irvine. And so I kind of heard about it as I was, you know, graduating. And I knew that their program was, you know, really going to grow and blow up. And I had several friends who were kind of interested in it. And yeah, I think I just graduated a couple years too earlier. It would have been something that I might have pursued there as well. But great school, great program. And I think they were really on the forefront of, you know, a lot of higher education gaming. So that was kind of cool to see.
Yeah, absolutely. So you graduated from California Baptist University and went to work for Disney. What was that experience like?
Yeah, so I actually worked through Disney. I went to school and worked through Disney for Disney at the same time, and then spent another year afterwards. I was a character there. So I started off as, you know, one of the princesses. And yeah, and so that was, you know, a really cool experience. I got to travel a lot and get a lot of exposure to the, you know, entertainment industry. And, you know, I kind of fell in love with that. And, you know, I always loved sports. Obviously, I was a student athlete. So I think that it made sense to kind of transition that entertainment into sports entertainment. So that's kind of how I landed at the Angels. But Disney was a wonderful experience. Their, you know, customer service and their training and just the experience that you get there is like nothing else. There's a reason they have the reputation they do.
Yeah, absolutely. And for my audience, we are recording this in the morning. Generally, I'm a much more awake person in the afternoon, you know, a little bit more vibrant. But you've been working for eSpin, and the eSpin is also in collaboration with the Charlotte Phoenix, the pro team. Stay Plugged In focuses on collegiate, correct?
Yeah. So our, you know, main demographic and our main market is the high school student. So our whole goal is to, you know, help them get through the pipeline of making it to a varsity level program. And we really want them to be able to get scholarships to do so. As more and more schools, you know, come on board and recognize the value in it, you know, we want to make sure we guide them through that process. Cause you know, you forget, obviously football, gymnastics, you know, any of the, you know, major sports, like scholarships have been a thing for a really long time. So we're kind of on the front end of that, and kind of the, we're in the still pioneer phase of that. So there isn't as much support around it for the students, you know, whether that be at home or through their, you know, high school program, they just don't have the kind of handholding experience that a lot of, you know, other major sports do. So, you know, we really want to close that gap and make sure that, you know, they have people to kind of guide them and really walk them through that process, what they need to know, what they should be looking for in a school. You know, we want to make sure that it's a good fit all around, and it's not just about going to the best, you know, program you can in terms of what is the best esports program, but also who's going to align with, you know, the major that you're looking for and what atmosphere are you looking for at the school. So we kind of take on this consultative approach in that way.
Interesting. So pathway to collegiate, you know, at least on the like the corporate and grassroots professional side, we're always talking about the pathway to pro. We don't talk a lot about the pathway to collegiate outside of like someone might mention that, you know, somebody is doing a scholarship or a grant or something like that for someone to pursue collegiate esports, but that's like the surface of it. So how does Stay Plugged In get integrated into high schools?
Yeah, so that's a great question. A lot of it right now, just like any, you know, we're obviously in the startup phase. We're finding kids in Discords, and we run leagues and we run tournaments. And so it's always free to play in our leagues. And then, you know, from there, it's a subscription-based model in order to, you know, help get these kids recruited. And that obviously takes, you know, a lot of staff manpower and us finding colleges to, you know, help match them with. So, you know, we're really kind of the go-between in these matchmakers in that way. But it's difficult because I don't think every kid realizes that this is an opportunity still, you know, that even to them, like, I think a lot of them do focus on the path to pro, but and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think that there's still kind of this disillusion that it's really easy to go pro, or that there's a lot more percentage of kids that go pro than actually do. because I think at a younger age, when I was a gymnast growing up, I knew that there were certain levels that I needed to get to, similar to ranking, I think, for gaming. But I knew that I was going to be able to be at a, you know, I wasn't going to go to a D1 school for gymnastics. I knew that at a young age, and you just because you kind of have peer comparisons. And I don't know, you know, like Aaron Judge or some of the big, you know, Mike Trout, he knew he was going to go pro when probably by the time he was 15 for, you know, the baseball fans. And I don't know if that necessarily exists right now in the kind of gaming world. Do you, and you know, maybe that's a question for you. So I think that right now the idea of path to college is not as attractive maybe. But you have to kind of think, you know, just like any other sport, even like any other professional sport, less than 1% goes pro. So, you know, there really needs to be an additional focus. How can you, you know, get your education?
Well, at least from the Esports Business Network's, you know, perspective, there's a lot of growth to happen in esports at all levels in the process of becoming a professional esports player. And there's a lot of different perspectives and people taking different approaches as to what professional means in esports. You know, does it mean, you know, replicating the traditional sports model, or does it mean a more open source, open platformed compete to be the best platform? You know, you really can't, you can't, it's not apples to apples when you look at the MLB or, you know, major or just baseball in general, because there are personalities that you can reference in the past 5 to 10 years. But we're, you know, talking about Babe Ruth, you know, when we're talking about baseball, like that's over, you know, how many ever years now that he's played, you know, early 1900s and whatnot, baseball players as well. Like, you know, it's just a totally different conversation when it comes to professional esports. But, it, you know, rolling off of that there, what did you bring in from professional baseball that maybe added value to esports? Like, what was lacking? Did you see something lacking that you could bring from traditional sports?
That's a good question. I definitely think that we're still working on a way to monetize, you know, the right things. Mm-hmm. You know, how can we? I think traditional sports has, and not in a bad way, but I think that any brand can get in front of, you know, the Angels baseball at our stadium, you know, as long as it fit within the, you know, family friendly atmosphere that we were trying to achieve, you know, so Budweiser or, you know, major coffee companies like Pete's Coffee, those were all brands. And, you know, there's a variety of, you know, demographics within that stadium. You know, there's 5-year-old kids, and there's also, you know, 85-year-old men and women. So, you know, the need for the brand to be really authentic didn't necessarily, that didn't need to be there. But with this population, I do think that they're a lot more vocal about the brands that they want marketed to them, that they are loyal to. And so I think that if anything, esports has taught me that. And so, you know, there's a lot of different little things that I think, I bring to esports, but I don't know if this is initially from the traditional sports world. It seems like events, like planning a year out, like, you know, all of those really structural things doesn't necessarily exist in esports. At least right now, like maybe the big, you know, conferences and events like BlizzCon and those types of things get planned a lot, you know, a lot longer out. But I think in general, you know, the guys on my team are like, hey, we're hosting an event in a month. Like what, you know, so, I think some of that needs to change because I think that there could be like production value could be a lot better. Prize winnings could be a lot better if there was just some more lead time. So I can only speak for my company specifically, but I think that, overall I've seen it be a trend in esports that it needs a little bit more structure in terms of, execution and kind of planning out year to year.
Yeah. So when I hear that story, I heard that story a lot. You know, esports is a rocket ship, and we're just trying to hold on to it, as it goes, wherever it goes. And then the other tried and true statement of like, we're building the airplane as we're trying to fly it. Like that's like another statement. So you mentioned that the company that you're working for is a startup. Is there a parent company to the Charlotte Phoenix and the Stay Plugged In?
Yeah. So, you know, we've been getting a lot of coverage lately, which is great, by, you know, Esports Insider and TEO and Sports Business Journal. But it's called the Carolina Esports Hub is what it's, you know, eventually going to be called. And that will be kind of the overarching company that, you know, handles Stay Plugged In and the Charlotte Phoenix. But our goal is to have an arena here in Charlotte and kind of cover both spaces, cover, you know, the Carolinas. And, you know, Epic is here. Charlotte itself is already, you know, a big sports city. And so I think we're, you know, trying to further reinforce that by, you know, bringing esports here. I think it's a great market for it. It's very similar to Atlanta. And we saw the success that Atlanta had. You know, there's a large millennial and Gen Z population here, and there's a ton of transplants. And I think everyone's looking to kind of latch on to, you know, their new home. So if you're talking about kind of a geocentric idea, like, you know, some of those franchise teams have, I think that it's a perfect place for it. And yeah, so I think that's going to be kind of the overall company is the Carolina Esports Hub.
So Carolina Esports Hub, about how many people are working for the company right now?
We're growing every week, which is kind of, you know, great and crazy. I think we're at around 2025 folks.
2025 people. Yeah. And who are the founders of the company?
So Rick Suarez is the main founder. And then, you know, we have a couple of larger partners. John Brock, who's also a partial owner of Team Envy. He's involved with the company. And then CJ Collins, he has been in esports for a long time. He helped get the esports program off the ground with the Army. He's a 12-year Army vet. And he did, you know, a lot of RAN events. It's kind of his bread and butter. Did a lot of events here in Texas and then, you know, over here at in Charlotte once he relocated here. So those are kind of the main couple guys that are involved.
Oh, very cool. Yeah. So when you got into this role, you've now, you know, gone from California to Charlotte, North Carolina. You know, this seems very reminiscent of how esports is just designed. It's like this, you know, it has a online component and offline component, which creates this global, you know, industry where there's a lot of transplants and people moving around from location to location. What do you feel like you took from California and seeing how successful esports is in California to like bring a more value, I guess, to Carolina? Because I don't think of Carolina as esports. You know, I think like, oh, I lived in South Carolina one point in time in my life, and I remember, you know, I remember being involved in the gaming culture there, but I don't remember very much like a big community of gamers. Like, and so like when you mentioned earlier that, you know, with the Angels, you had like your local coffee company and sponsorship, that sort of doesn't exist in esports. So how is Carolina Esports Hub building community in the Carolinas?
Yeah. And I mean, I think that was one of the things that was really important for me personally leaving LA. It was already such a saturated market. I mean, you know, in terms of publishers, pro teams, you know, like I said, you've got Blizzard, you've got Riot, you know, you've got Team Liquid, like you've got all of these, you know, I know 100 Thieves, like they, you know, they were doing a lot of stuff there. So I really wanted to, you know, bring value to a market that, you know, was up and coming. And I, you know, I think I've seen recently a lot of studies on the best cities for gaming and for gamers, you know, based on how large, you know, the population, internet speed, you know, the amount of arcades, you know, whatever measurements they use to determine that, how many esports collegiate programs were, you know, in the city. So Charlotte is, you know, up there, and it's moving up all the time. And I think the only thing that has been missing is someone to organize that. So, you know, I'm a firm believer, you know, if you build it, they will come. And I think that for me, it was really important to come to a market that had a lot of opportunity and that we could kind of be the first to market. And I think that Charlotte, for me, kind of checked both of those boxes because there is a need here. And there's definitely a community. I mean, I can't believe how many people have reached out and are like, I'm so glad that you guys are doing this. You know, it's crazy that you have a major publisher in North Carolina, but there isn't more of, you know, a gaming community or arena or center or something to mm-hmm. you know, support that. So, and especially with all the esports programs that are, you know, varsity level programs that are here and even club programs at some of the colleges, like it was just a no brainer. So for me, it felt really cool to kind of build something from the ground up and be a part of that on the front end.
You know, you mentioned something there that, you know, it's kind of unbelievable with as many gaming developers there are, you know, here in Austin, you have Blizzard, you've got, you know, EA, you've got pretty much all the main developers have some form of office in Austin. Austin also really suffers from the same lack of community, lack of engagement from the developers. And so, you know, you'll have investors come into the space or corporations come into the space and build land centers.
Yeah.
And not know how to market to their audience. What do you think, why is it that traditional sports are more successful at building location-based organizations and community versus esports?
So this is just my opinion and my observation, but I would think that it's because the industry has been quite one-sided for a while in terms of staff, right? Like, you know, you needed to know, you, if you've been a gamer your entire life and you ended up going into that professionally, you know, that's the realm you, that's the realm, you know. I didn't know Discord existed until 4 months ago. So, you know, I think the teams and the developers, the publishers, like a lot of those companies have been very heavy on, you know, folks with a ton of esports experience and, you know, but maybe not as much of the outside like business acumen, just because esports as a business is so new. So I think that it's really important that you have hire people that have different strengths. And I think it's really important that you balance out a team with, you know, those that are esports vets that are really authentic to the scene and they can tell you, you know, hey, here's how we need to be marketing and here's who you need to be marketing to. But then in terms of creating strategy and campaigns and getting the word out and like in terms of building the infrastructure around those land centers, you need to have some people who have, you know, years of industry experience. So I don't pretend to know everything about esports and I'm vastly curious and interested in it. And I hope to kind of catch up in the next couple of years, but I'm okay that I don't know that because we've hired people who have that in-depth knowledge and I have my own skill set that I'm bringing to the table. So I think that's why. I think it's been very one-sided with the, you know, tribal knowledge of esports folks because there hasn't been as much of an influx from traditional sports and other industries for a while. And that's just now happening.
Yeah. I think to kind of give a little bit more support to what you're saying, people that come from a traditional gaming background, you know, they just gamed all the time, whether they played esports or not, or whether they participated in esports or not. You know, when they get onto the business side, even myself, you can get jaded against people that are just, you know, not traditional gamers get involved on the business side. Because there's a lack of appreciation for the culture of gaming. And so I've been talking to a lot of folks about this and one of the things that I think has changed in my vision and my perspective and my mindset around this is that there's a lot of problems that arise within how to like just experience just overall communication issues that you don't experience if you're not trying to broaden the audience of people that are watching. So like, you know, someone who watches movies, you know, or someone who's goes to music events or goes to sporting events, how do you get them to consume gaming content? And so a lot of people don't want, you know, they want to basically create an insular echo chamber within gaming and esports, and create like this divisive nature around people from a non-gaming background getting involved. And there's a lot of language, even on the corporate side, that it's hard to dance around the words because it can create sort of like a negative statement without trying to be negative. It makes people feel like they're not not included or that they can't be included, which is difficult. Inversely, when people from music or from art or gaming get involved and they overstep their boundaries, you know, they're not trying to be included in the culture, is where I think a lot of that negative pushback comes from early 2000s and up into 2010, when investors were coming in and taking advantage of, you know, young entrepreneurs who didn't know what the value of their businesses were. I sort of come from the best of both worlds, I guess, because I grew up, you know, in a time where gaming was emerging and traditional sports were still like in their height within Texas, at least. Texas football, you know, probably will never go away, even though, you know, we're going through our trials right now with the pandemic and all the snow and all the stuff that was going on. I was able to go to school, still participate in at the University of Hawaii and actually Texas State within football, through being a part of the broadcast team, and then participating in intramurals and things like that, and also playing games in tournaments on the side, and so I kind of got the opportunity to just see it from both angles, and then come today where I find myself being more involved in gaming than in traditional sports, ultimately because the accessibility is greater than it is in traditional sports, especially if you're trying to make a dollar. You know, if you want to, if especially like we'll get into like what does strategic partnerships mean for you, is you know, when you're selling merchandise, the percentage of money that goes back to the company is better, more than it is in a traditional sports model. Although of course you have the volume is much greater in traditional sports, so you have that to overcome, because in gaming, you know, statistics show that the average esports and gaming consumer spends about $3 per year on esports merchandise and apparel and ticketing and all that, versus baseball, which was $21 per year. But baseball is kind of going, you know, parabolic, whereas esports is exponentially going upward. And you know, we're just waiting for more data to come out about that. But what is the goal of what you're now doing for Carolina Esports Hub?
Yeah. And I mean, I kind of wanted to go back just for a minute about what you were talking about in terms of the, you know, divisiveness and kind of that divide. And I've definitely seen that and felt that. And not in a bad way necessarily, but I've even talked to my coworkers about it. You know, CJ, whom I mentioned, he was grinding it out, you know, working in esports and not getting paid and, you know, doing running events and LANs. And he's like, just for the love of it. And he's like, so it's really, he's like, I get it when people come in and they're like, you know, making these big salaries and they just kind of want a piece of it because it's, you know, this new hot thing. And he's been playing for the last 15, 20 years. And I get that. And, you know, I would be lying if I said that it wasn't a strategic move on my part to, you know, diversify my skill set and, you know, look at an industry that I wasn't like, hey, this looks cool. I definitely want to be involved in this. So it was definitely a strategic move, but I'm also a big believer that good people are good people. And I've always taken the approach again, that I don't pretend to know a ton about esports, but I'm really committed to educating myself and honoring the people who have, you know, were grinding it out and worked and, you know, really working to be a good listener for them and what would make me a good partner to work with. And also what would make me a good coworker to, you know, be involved with and work with on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, trying to take that like really authentic approach, I hope has gained me, you know, some, I guess some respect and just some, you know, some of that fact so that they don't just feel like, oh, you know, you're coming to work in this space for the money now that it's, you know, the new shiny thing. And vice versa. Like I think CJ always says, like, you know, you're good at things that I'm not good at. And, you know, and that's okay. Again, it's about kind of rounding out your staff. And, you know, I help with events, but I don't have the operational mindset that he does. And so that's, you know, why he's here. So I think it just is going to take a little bit of grace on both sides. People kind of, you know, letting other people come into the market and, you know, in an authentic way. They have to come in an authentic way and in a really caring way. But yeah, I think we'll see that change over the next couple of years. But yeah, again, good people are good people. And in terms of, now I've forgot your question, but
partnerships. Well, how are you? I mean, I said a lot of things there, but I think we a little bit going back to that a little bit previously to that. That long question was about monetization. What is your role as strategic partnership mean to the Colorado Esports Hub?
Yeah. So one of the, you know, things, obviously we have different pipelines and we have different, you know, revenue streams. So one of them is obviously the subscription model. So for our actual Stay Plugged In program. So, you know, we've got high school students signing up so that they can just like, again, trying to model some of it after traditional sports. When my brothers were growing up playing baseball or I was going to gymnastics meets, there was, you know, some entry fees to those tournaments to play in those showcases. And then you had the opportunity to kind of meet college scouts and they'd hand you this business card and it was exciting and they'd follow up with you as you kind of moved into your junior, senior year. That doesn't exist a whole lot in esports right now. So we're trying to, again, kind of close that gap for the high school students and the colleges. So kind of manage the revenue streams for those, you know, high school student subscription models, those high school students that are subscribers, and then the colleges. So the colleges, obviously, you know, maybe administration is hiring one or two coaches or, you know, one or two people on staff, but they have to be a scout. They have to, you know, these varsity level programs are really student run. So it's hard for them. You know, they can't jump on a stream at 9:30 at night all the time and, you know, poke around the internet for these kids to find them. And so we're trying to streamline that process for them too and kind of giving them access to this database for their subscription so that they can look at kids in the area, look at kids who, you know, have the GPA that they need, that play the games that they're recruiting for, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I'm managing those relationships too with the colleges and showing them kind of the value of, you know, our business. And then for both companies, partnerships looks very similar to what it does in traditional sports in terms of finding sponsors and brands that, you know, either exchange for product, sponsoring, you know, our students with, you know, whether it be gear, like a Nike or something like that, peripherals, like, or, you know, endemic or non-endemic partners, but, you know, finding like HyperX to do our headphones and, you know, all of our students get, you know, access to discounts there. And then also monetization of stream assets, you know, selling digital ad space to sponsors that may, you know, want to get in front of Gen Z or, you know, millennials or whatever that, you know, age range is that, you know, our kids in our leagues, and also those who follow our professional team, the Charlotte Phoenix. So kind of finding partners for all of those different revenue streams. Was that clear?
It's interesting because, well, it is confusing, and it should be, because it's so, because of possibly this question I'm going to ask you. I've had a lot of female leaders on this podcast. And when you are approaching sponsors and, you know, asking them to get involved in gaming and esports, what is their first impression? Because, you know, I think largely when non-endemic investors and sponsors look at gaming, they think male dominated, and they have a female leader coming and asking for them to participate in a male dominated industry.
Yeah.
What's sort of the reception that you get? Because I know there's a lot of female leaders, but they just don't, for whatever reason, investors, sponsors, other endemic brands just haven't, maybe it's that they're not, you know, doing business with companies like yours, or whatever reason. They, is it a shock to them to see, you know, someone like yourself, you know, building brand in esports?
Short answer is yes. and that's not unique to esports. I think it's amplified in esports, but it also doesn't help that I have a unisex name. so, you know, I can't count how many times, you know, even at the Angels, because it's twofold, right? It's working in sports. Maybe it's threefold. It's, I think, having a unisex name. I think it is working in sports in general. And I also think it's being in, you know, a partnership / a sales role. Right. So I think that all of those things combined, you traditionally associate with men. And I think that that's part of the reason I'm here, because early on in my career, I realized that. And I think that being the stubborn person that I was, you know, I decided early on that I'm going to do this because somebody needs to. And I often did get clients when I would speak to them via email mostly, and then we would get on the phone for the first time. They couldn't even hide their, oh, wow, I thought you were a guy. And, you know, I didn't always want to put in my emails some of those dead giveaways that you're a female, you know, like the sign offs that are, you know, really feminine or traditionally associated with femininity. And I didn't want to use a lot of exclamation points because, again, think that those can be associated with femininity. And so I think that because I didn't do those things, it wasn't a dead giveaway that I was a female. And I think I wanted it that way. And so now I think that even more so working in esports, I've found that partners are, I'm getting on a phone call later with a potential partner that has been referring to me, you know, in my emails, like, hey man, how you doing? Or we were texting. He's like, hey man, hope you had a good day. And I'm not going to also make the correction because I know I'm going to get on the phone with him. So I think just by default, they think that. But that's, again, part of the reason that I'm here, is that if I thought I was a little bit lonely as a woman in sales in baseball, I'm certainly more lonely in, you know, gaming as a female in sales. But I want to change that because my daughter may be really interested in gaming, or, you know, there's a whole generation of women. And I know statistically we see that a large percentage of gamers are female. So I think that it's really important that they see women in, you know, high ranking or director level positions at gaming companies.
Yeah, that's definitely going to be very insular on the corporate side for a while. Other than, like, obviously female led businesses and female dominated staff and things like that.
Yeah, it's also a testament to my company and to our leadership that was a very purposeful and intention. Like, they put a lot of intention into diversifying their staff, and I think that that's one of the best places to start.
Absolutely, and you know, online, I don't think I don't think it's is just there's a, this large disparity between how many, you know, women or how many men or how many whatever you identify as is included in gaming and esports. It is definitely reflected offline. If you go to any of these conventions, you know, if it's either a sister or a girlfriend or something, not a lot of individual women are participating or showing up to these events. Have you worked within your company to get more women engaged and involved?
Yeah. So that's one of the things, again, coming from LA, I had a lot, I'm heavily involved in an association called WISE Women in Sports and Events, and LA, a big portion of, you know, that population of women who was in that association with me were from Blizzard, were from Riot, you know, were from Team Liquid. And, you know, I've been working with them closely and now trying to find, you know, Epic or get them involved and, you know, any pro teams, Charlotte Phoenix, getting them involved. How can we, you know, lift younger women up? How can we, you know, get them into this space, and where does that disconnect happen? And, you know, for me, I see it happening at a young age, right? Because I have to assume that because we, you know, of the hundreds of kids that we have in our leagues and tournaments and Discord, there's three girls that will consistently play with us. And I'm like, if you know, more than 40% of gamers are female, where are they? And where are they at the junior high school level? Are they not on Discord? Are they just not being marketed to? Why aren't they coming and playing in these leagues? Because you see them, you know, starting to emerge at the professional level, and you see them starting to, you know, emerge within the gaming industry, but I just don't think they're represented, and they're kind of moving through that pipeline from a young age. So I really like think that we need to kind of go back to K-12, and we need to really get them involved, and we really need to get the parents at home involved, and for it to be something that they, you know, make available and really accessible to their kids in general, but specifically, you know, young women.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, there's extremely positive press around women in gaming on a neutral level, but there's also extremely negative press on women in a neutral level too. Based on the fact, and that's also this case for anybody who's, you know, I don't know how I want to say this, you know, doesn't fit a traditional model of mm-hmm. how someone should be. And so as a result, I think, you know, one of the highest paid esports players is a female, Scarlett. She just signed to the Shopify Rebellion. That's like a $1.3 billion esports organization. Like, there's financially and monetarily, the money is there for who, whatever you are, whatever mm-hmm. you identify as. The question ultimately becomes is how does that get expanded to a macro level and less used as a marketing tool at a micro level? Yeah. Yeah, that's sort of the challenge.
And I think that starts with building the pipeline of, you know, young women, because I do think you're seeing that overcorrection right now, which is good, right? You know, there was probably just as many, you know, male interviewees that interviewed for my position, but mm-hmm. they were making a conscious effort to diversify their staff. So, you know, in a way, that might be considered an overcorrection, but I also think that it was a necessary one. And, you know, so right now I think there's a lot of attention and highlighting, and again, when it's not presented in an authentic way and it doesn't have, you know, you can't just, you know, bring a female on staff and just to say that you can, is you can slap it on your website, and you can't just, you know, post about International Women's Day and, you know, that's your, you know, you're good for the year, you know, you did something.
I'd like to dive into that a little bit more. Yeah. We're running out of time on this show.
Yeah,
that's a very interesting topic, especially I wanted to ask you about Twitch and whatnot, but that is a very interesting controversy that's going on right now mm-hmm. within slapping socially woke concepts into branding that that, you know, like that over, like over, I forgot the word you use, overcorrection, mm-hmm. or, yeah, I don't know what the results are from sort of actions like that. And I don't think that, you know, I don't think that is true of what you were saying. I don't think, that like in your position that there's, not enough female strategic partners or somebody at the C-suite level. I think there is an under, not enough, accounting for women in leadership roles in gaming and esports, both. So, I want to say thank you for coming on the show. I know, we've talked about a lot of subjects, and I could talk to you for hours about mm-hmm. more things related to diversity, inclusion, monetization of esports and gaming, advertising, of course, and a lot of different things. But I want to give you the opportunity as we close out here to talk about things that are upcoming within the Carolina Esports Hub. Stay plugged in and the Charlotte Phoenix, and then also let the audience know how they can get in contact with you if they would like to, you know, probably form a partnership.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the exciting thing with the Carolina Esports Hub is that, you know, we're going through our second raise right now. So we're definitely, you know, finding partners and investors that, you know, believe in this and they believe in the idea, both on the pro org side. You know, they want to bring something to Charlotte and the Carolinas in general. You know, they want to create the same buzz, and they, you know, they really want to create a home for that kind of market that's been left out here, or that just, you know, hasn't been represented here, which I'm all about. And I think that that's one of the main things that brought me here. And then stay plugged in. Like, we've got so many events coming up, and we're really trying to change the landscape of what recruiting looks like, you know, and we're working with partners like Coalition of Parents in Esports. And it was started by, you know, Shay Williams, and she's a parent whose son went pro, and she now kind of does consulting. It's a nonprofit, and they do consulting about how to help parents know how to help them engage with their kids who have a love for gaming and who want to go into a collegiate program, how to, you know, support them through that. And then also, you know, same thing, kids who want to go pro, like, you know, you can lean into that as well. But, you know, we're doing a lot there, and we're doing that by creating a service that doesn't really exist right now. And we're filling the gap of, you know, things that I think will eventually be filled by every high school esports gaming coach. And I think that along with the parents, and so we're doing that through LAN events. We're hosting one at Shenandoah March 13th and 14th, where we've partnered with them and Joey's team over there to, again, model traditional sports, because I think that's one of the first ways that parents really engage and get involved, is because it's something they can relate to. Oh, I know what a combine looks like, where my kid is showcased and gets to, you know, perform in front of scouts who are looking, that have scholarship dollars, and they get to have the tangible, like, here's my business card, let's connect on, you know, Stay Plugged In's platform, let's talk to your parents, et cetera, et cetera. So we're doing more of those LAN events, and those will happen at some major colleges and event centers coming up. We're going to have one. We're partnering with the NECC. So that's, you know, a big one where we're kind of tapping into their conference. And I think you're going to see a lot more partnerships coming from us in that way, where we become the kind of official recruiting arm for them. And we host these LAN recruiting events in person throughout the rest of the year. Always kids can join our leagues for free. They can check out what the subscription comes with. Colleges can obviously call any one of us. I can be reached via email, taylor.gotch@espn.gg, or on Discord. It's Gotcha, G-A-C-H-Y-U-H. Twitter, same thing. My handle is Gotcha, G-A-C-H-Y-U-H. And yeah, I think just kind of look out for what Charlotte's doing. I think Charlotte Phoenix is looking to acquire a couple more titles. So there'll be some news about that soon, hopefully here. And yeah, I think we're going to kind of keep on growing.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Taylor Gotch, eastbin.gg. Again, listeners, thank you for listening.
Oh, I appreciate it. Bye.
Hey, y'all. It's Trent Knox, founder and CEO of Esports Business Network. I want to say thank you for listening to this podcast. If you're finding value in the podcast, I would greatly appreciate it if you share the podcast to your network and write a positive review on your preferred podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, feel free to make a contribution to our working capital accounts on Cash App or PayPal. Our username is ESPORTSBIZNET. That's Esports BizNet on both platforms. As always, we'd love for you to join our community and platform at https://www.ebn.gg. You can take advantage of a free subscription to our Bronze membership by following the directions on the homepage. Part of the Bronze membership is access to our Discord server and private membership channels. The conversation only evolves with participation from esports entrepreneurs like yourself. We need to hear about your esports business to understand how we can move the industry forward as a community. You can also join the community by joining the Facebook and LinkedIn groups. An additional goal of EBN is to move the conversation forward on your preferred social media platform. So as a last note, don't forget to follow us on social media for current events, news, and other esports related topics. Follow and subscribe to Esports Business Network on social media. Looking forward to networking with you very soon.